Welcome to a new episode at Economics Design. Today, we're going to continue on with options, which is the theme of the month. And today, we're going to talk about Potion. Potion is a new protocol, and something that's very interesting is that it doesn't have a token. And that's why I picked them and wanted to talk a little bit about them. Once again, before we get started, nothing is investment advice. Everything is really from an educational point of view, and it's for you to understand and learn about what's going on. We're going to cover a few things today. First, we're going to understand what the Potion network is, what are the different problems in the options space. Then we're going to look at the model where it doesn't use any tokens. Then we're going to look at the economics design of Potion, because that's something we want to talk a little bit more about, as well as some recommendations and conclusion. Okay, so what is the Potion network? Once again, it is quite a new protocol, and it doesn't have any tokens yet. And this is interesting because you realize that a lot of these protocols, sometimes they really do not need tokens. And tokens could come in a later stage where it starts generating revenue and you can socialize the gains to all these different stakeholders. But the first thing, the most important thing in your protocol, especially in finance, especially in DeFi, is really to build the right kind of algorithms. And this is what we want to talk about in Potion today. So remember, I started off this entire topic with why options exist. One of the good uses of options is really to view it as an insurance product to hedge you against price volatility. So one thing that we talked a lot about is the put option. So the put option is where you get to sell your asset at a fixed price or at an agreed upon price. And this is good because then if the prices drop too low, then you can have the put option or the selling price at a price that you're comfortable with. So maybe if we're talking about Ethereum being $1,700 and you have a put option that allows you to sell it at $1,700. Why? Just in case something happens and Ethereum falls to $900. Then this option contract allows you to sell it at $1,700. And that's how you get to use option contracts, put contracts as insurance. So this is a good way to mitigate risks as sellers, right? Or as buyers. So this is basically insurance for buyers. And this is good because the space is very volatile and we want to create products. We want to look at how to structure different things to make sure that buyers are protected and more buyers can come into the space and really grow the DeFi ecosystem. So what innovation are they doing over here? We talked about a few options model before, or a few different types of protocols. And all these different options protocol, what they're trying to do is innovate the way for sellers and buyers. So we want to innovate the way to either pair sellers and buyers, or for sellers to create contracts, or for buyers to find out ways to be buying all these different contracts. And one of the biggest problems is how do you innovate in this space? And this is what we're going to talk about. So in general, for the Potion network or the Potion protocol, it's mainly options and mainly put options where you want to sell at a specific price. There's also call options to be able to buy, and these are for a different subsegment of users. But more importantly, we want to look at a put option because put option is the most straightforward way to look at the option product as an insurance for users. What are the existing problems or difficulties in the options market? The first one is unscalable liquidity infrastructure or liquidity architecture. So we talked a lot about how you can create option products, but you can't exactly trade them in secondary market. And so this is one of these problems that it's a good problem to have, because then it really suggests a more mature secondary market. We're not at that stage yet in the DeFi space especially. So that's something to look forward to, and that's something to worth innovating in. There's limited market availability. Firstly, options or derivatives are not very easy products. So there's still some limitations to liquidity, trying to get more people in the space. There is unreliable pricing. That is interesting because a lot of options models that we use is the Black-Scholes model, which is not exactly the best. There are a lot of problems with that, especially when we're looking at very risky products, very volatile products. The Black-Scholes model doesn't really help to aggregate these kind of information out there. So this is something that we'll talk about later. As well as a lot of the options that we talked about so far, they're all European pricing. And do you remember what European options are? It means that you can only execute them when they expire. But one of the benefits of options is that you can execute them anytime you want. And so this is the American style of options, or the American options. We have not seen them in the space yet, especially in the DeFi protocols. So that's something worth looking into, and that's something that Potion wants to solve. So now let's go into the model of Potion. The model is actually quite simple, because remember, there is no tokens yet. So we have a liquidity pool. So this is similar to the autonomous market maker, where individuals put funds in and they will get yield out. So this could be liquidity providers, because the users will interact with the liquidity pool and not directly with the liquidity providers. Then we have this protocol here that interacts with the liquidity pool. So the liquidity pool exists for you to, you know, if the user wants to execute the contract, so to buy the options contract for, or to buy ETH at whatever price, then ETH comes from this pool. So this pool is where people put funds or ETH in there. And when it changes to USDC, for example, then it goes back to the liquidity providers. Then we also have users, and they will pay a premium to get the protocol and to get the options, option contract. And in return, they will get the contract, and they can choose to execute it if they want to. Then there are two other parts in the ecosystem. The first one is the keeper bots. This is to check prices. So think of them as oracles, or the validator to oracles, to see what the prices of the ETH prices are, or when it's time to execute, what are the different information needs to be considered. Then you have another on-chain oracle using UMA, the protocol, to give the options contract some information. So this is the general model of Potion contract. What we want to talk about is to dive deeper into understanding the mechanisms used involved to create this protocol. The first thing we want to look at is mechanism design. Remember when I talked to you about the framework where we have three things? We have the market design, we have the mechanism design. So mechanism design are the rules of the system, and then we have token design. So this is the rules of the tokens used in the system. So although they do not have the token on their own native tokens, they do have other tokens, which are ETH or BAT or BTC, whatever tokens that they have in the options contract. So this is where those rules will fall under token design. So with market design, we don't have to talk about it, because in general, we have talked about it many times. What we want to talk about is more of the mechanism design. And there are three categories in mechanism design. We have governance, we have non-financial incentives, and then we have structure. So in governance, recall that they don't have a governance token. They don't have a native token. But in governance, we don't only just look at the governance token, but we also want to look at resolution. Governance token usually comes in decision making, right? But we don't have any decisions to be made yet. So we don't have to care about decision making. We want to look at resolution. So where does resolution come in? Remember just now where I talked about how there are keeper bots in the system? This is where resolution comes in, because if the protocol keeps calling to UMA to get the Oracle pricing, then that's going to be very expensive for on-chain fees. So what the protocol does is that it will take off-chain Oracle data like CoinGecko or other sources. They mainly use CoinGecko to get the price of ETH. So let's say the price of ETH is 1,700, and this 1,700 will be used to be input into the bonding curve, which we'll talk about later, into the bonding curve to determine the price of premiums that users have to pay. Now, as a user, I realize that, ETH has changed so much that by the time I'm given the premium to pay, ETH is actually worth $1,600. So that's a difference of $100. And this difference of $100 will be reflected in the premiums that I pay, because it might be higher or lower. And so I don't want to do that. And what do? So this is where I have a conflict, right? There's a $100 difference, and this is where the governance in terms of resolution comes in to deal with that. And this is what the keeper bot does. Okay, so now we move on to structure. The structure is very interesting, because the structure is one thing that we look at in structure is bargaining. How are prices determined? So prices are determined differently for different kind of protocols. So some could be option pricing, auction pricing, some could be first like prices are set and fixed, and some are using bonding curves. And this is where a lot of bonding curve aspects could come in. There are, when we talk about the kind of users in the ecosystem, you have the options buyer and the options seller. The options seller is the liquidity provider. So with the option buyer, it's very easy for them, right? All they have to do is pay the premium. And we saw how bots could come in, we saw how Oracle comes in to determine the premium to be paid for the option buyer. What about option seller? The option seller, one thing to consider as a protocol is what is the probability of the LP, of the liquidity pool, going to zero, so going to be bankrupt. And this will really determine what kind of pricing models we are going to look at, what the bargaining strategy is going to be. So initially, the system used, as you probably would have guessed, the Black-Scholes model. And the Black-Scholes options model is something that's used by a lot of other protocols. Hedging uses that. A lot of other options protocol, they mainly use the Black-Scholes model because that's something that has been tested, that's something that won the Nobel Prize, and that's something that a lot of people are comfortable with. However, there are a lot of limitations to the Black-Scholes model. The Black-Scholes model, mainly it's about pricing assets with low volatility, with a lower, longer, splatter tail. Whereas that kind of asset structure is not really something that we see in the crypto space. The things that we see in the crypto space is a lot more volatile, it's a lot more uncertain. There's some correlation here and there. There's going to be fat tails. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty and volatility. So the Black-Scholes model was something that they used initially, but after modeling it, they realized that, okay, it might not always be the best kind of outcome. It could still be useful for certain types of products, for certain type of assets, but it might not be useful for most type of products. So this is pricing bargaining mechanism number one, which is the Black-Scholes option model. The second thing that they looked at is called the Kelly criterion. So the Kelly criterion is something used in portfolio management, where we want to look at, given this amount of assets in our portfolio, how much do we allocate based on looking at the probability of returns, how much do we want to allocate, and what is the premium that we're willing to pay. So that's the general idea. It's not used so much in options model, it's used more in portfolio management. However, if you think about liquidity pools, if you look at Balancer, you look at Uniswap, you look at SushiSwap, all these different liquidity pools, they behave kind of like a portfolio. We talked about impermanent loss. We talked about a lot of different kind of losses in liquidity pools. So you can almost visualize, or you can almost compare liquidity pools with portfolio. So if we can apply this Kelly criterion to this portfolio management, what does it mean? It means that we can now look at, given the risk, given the volatility, given the uncertainty of different kind of assets or the asset itself, what can we do to change the kind of premiums so that we can get a fairer risk that the liquidity providers are comfortable with? And what we want to do is also to remove reduce this uncertainty where the liquidity pool goes to zero. So this is what, in general, this is what we're going to look at. So with Black-Scholes option, we look at strike price, we look at volatility, implied volatility, which we have talked about. Then we look at expiry, and we look at the current price. So together, we add it into the model, and what is the output that we get? The output that we get is your premium. However, we might not this model, because it mainly uses a normal bell curve, a lot of the asset prices, a lot of the assets don't follow that, so this is not always the best model. Instead, we use a different model where we get premium, where we have premium, we have payout, we have the odds, so the probability, we put them into the Kelly criterion model, and we get allocation. Allocation as in the amount of assets in our portfolio we will be using. So allocation is the assets in our portfolio that we'll be using to be investing in the different in the system. So this is the Kelly model, this is the Black-Scholes model. And the Black-Scholes model could be an alternative for the model for pricing. And then Kelly model is a second alternative. What it does is that we can set the allocation, so maybe 50% or 100%, whatever. And we can define the payout rule and odds so that we can find out what the premium is to be paid. So you see that in these two models, we have both premiums available. This is the users paying for that. And we have different ways to calculate them. And this is where bonding curves come super handy, because what we can do is we have these models available. These are mathematical models. All we have to do is to price them according to whatever different kind of axes or different kind of assets that we're looking at, and then to find out what the premium will be given the change in different kind of structures. So this allows the liquidity pool to be more, to be a bit more robust, to be a bit more conservative in risk management. And what users can do is to determine the different kind of liquidity pools that they're comfortable with, the different kind of pricing models. And in this mechanism, if you have your own pricing model, if you have your own method to calculate what the best premium is, you can create your own liquidity pool and use the strategy that you're comfortable with. So that is the structure of how the mechanism design of Potion option, the Potion protocol is. Okay, and what about token design? In token design, they don't really have a token per se, but they do. In token design, we look at a few things. We look at the token policy, so the monetary policy, but because they don't have a token, we don't have to talk about this. Then we look at the financial incentives. They don't have a native token, so we don't have to talk about that, but what are the financial incentives in the system? So in the system, right now, the protocol itself doesn't earn money, so it doesn't have any revenue, and all the premiums will be returned to the users, to the liquidity providers, or the liquidity pool that will be divided to the liquidity providers. So this is how it's working right now. It's zero profits. Then they're probably going to start expanding this a little bit more, because remember we have the keeper bots. This is something that they're doing. And these keeper bots will be getting some profits as well, because these are incentives to make sure that they actually solve the problem, because keeper bots exist in the resolution phase, right? And if your items are mispriced or the pricing strategy is not right, this is where the keeper bots come in to ensure that they're incentivized to do that, and we have to get some profits from there. So the current model is that it's zero profits. Premiums all go to liquidity providers, but this will probably change very soon. Okay, and recommendations. So I've got three recommendations if they're looking into the token model. The first one is a utility governance token. And as you can imagine, the governance token will be used for profit sharing, as well as asking the keeper bots to be staking governance token and making different kind of changes to the different parameters of the liquidity pools. Remember that the liquidity pools are more or less defined by the bonding curve, but the bonding curve could have different kind of parameters that could be changed, and this is where users can come in to be voting upon them. However, this is also a bit tricky, because if someone is not comfortable with understanding options and how option pricing is being made, then it will be quite difficult or it will be challenging to give them the authority to make all these different changes when they don't understand what these changes are going to be. The second one is liquidity pool tokens. So think of it as a way of, it's like ownership of liquidity pools in Balancer, in Uniswap, in SushiSwap, in Bancor. All these different pools are basically almost like a portfolio of different kind of assets in there. And so what Potion could do is to have different kind of liquidity pools for different kind of assets and a token to represent this asset. Why? Because then these assets can be traded on secondary market instead of someone exiting the system and then someone else entering the system, because doing that shift, that change on someone removing liquidity and someone else adding liquidity in, that would be a bit, that could mess up the calculations for a bit because of whatever model that they might be using. So if you have a token that represents the stakes or shares in the liquidity pool, then people can just be trading their stake and share instead, and this can be represented in a token. So it's not so much a speculative token, it's more of a token to represent the liquidity pool that has been created. This is also useful because when someone creates a liquidity pool, then because they have their own strategy, then this is also something that can be using the token you can use in different kind of interesting accounting mechanism. So for all, because it's the guy's strategy, for all profits, part of the profits can go to that guy, or if there are losses, then part of the losses will also come from that guy, whereas everything else can be socialized. So that's a very interesting way of calculating a decentralized pool of liquidity or decentralized pool of assets. And the third one is an options contract. So if we can get a token to tokenize the options contract and trade their options instead, that will also be very interesting. Because one of the problems that I mentioned initially is that options are a bit difficult because they have a huge lack of liquidity. It's quite difficult once the options contracts are created, it's quite difficult to trade them because you just can't really do that. But now with this asset being able to be executed or liquidated, or these options contracts can be used anytime, then trading it can be quite beneficial to anybody who wants to buy it. So this will be something that's quite useful to consider as well. In conclusion, the Potion protocol is very interesting in the options space. It uses different kind of models, like the Black-Scholes model that everyone is comfortable with, as well as new kind of models like the Kelly Criterion model, or other kind of strategies that people are comfortable with creating and testing it out in the liquidity pools. I think that's something worth looking into, especially when you can model these different mechanisms and models out. And then we think about the tokens later, because for these this complicated derivative products to succeed, it's not so much about what kind of tokens, or are the tokens overpriced or underpriced. It's more like what kind of risk the protocol is looking at, how do you incentivize people to come in, and then from there, the tokens will capture the economic value of the entire risk management, the community, the different kind of participants and mechanism design that and rules in the game. And that's where the tokens will have a little bit more value, a little bit more robust value than just having a token there and praying hard that it will go up. So I think that's something worth considering. And once again, this is not investment advice. This is really just educational. So if you have any questions, just drop them in the comments below and I'll get back to them. Till then, I'll see you in the next episode, and happy Chinese New Year.